It's the Brouhaha Podcast with Steve Jackson and Mark Carpenter.
It is Brouhaha. All right, our next guest is JaVale McGee, a 10-year NBA veteran playing with the Warriors. JaVale, good to see you.
And I would need another one of me to stack up as tall as that, as he is, and maybe even another one.
Mike's telling me I'm wrong on this one again, as always. Herlinda is here along with Mark Carpenter as we do Brews News with Herlinda and the Drive Brouhaha. I've been saying all day Berryessa Brewery, but they couldn't make it, so...
Yeah.
I guess they're coming another day, huh?
Yeah, they'll come another day. They're going to be doing a series of music, which will be kind of fun.
But that's okay, because I got with me some beers from New Orleans that my son brought home to me. He was there for his honeymoon.
Nice.
Jucifer from Gnarly Barley.
That's funny. Really good.
It's a good beer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a lot of juicy flavor. They call it an American IPA, but it's very hazy. You could call it a New England IPA, I'm sure. The other thing that I like about it, on the bittering units, it's at the low end of what you would call an IPA. But for the hop flavor, is at the high end. It's got lots of hop flavor and a little lower bitterness. And it's not cloying. The hop, it finishes nicely. You have a nice, clean tasting.
That's what I was saying. You get the hops, but it's not slapping you in the face. And the finish is gorgeous. I told you during the break, I want a cheeseburger really bad. We're sending Mark out for burgers.
Now you're making me hungry. I better make the run.
It's probably a bit of a jambalaya there.
That's really good.
I brought a beer. I brought a beer from Provence, France. We went truffle hunting in this field. I can't even say we're not a lot. It's like. They are very private about their truffle grounds there because they're worth so much money, and other French people will come and steal from them. So they won't allow French groups to come and do the truffle hunting or tours. Only people from out of the country.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. So because they're so proprietary.
What is the deal with truffles? I mean, I don't know
truffles,
that I've ever...
They're heaven.
I've had truffle-infused cheesecake something, but yeah. I don't know what a truffle is. I know it's a mushroom.
Yeah, it's a fungi. It's a mushroom. And
I'm a fungi.
But they're fairly rare. These were summer truffles.
They're completely underground, too,
yeah, they're
correct?
Underground.
That's why you need a dog or a pig to find it. Mm-hmm.
I got to dig them up, actually. So we found six of them. So traditionally they were found with pigs, but then the pigs would eat the truffles. And you don't want to put your hand in to stop that because of truffles. The pig's teeth.
The pig will eat your hand.
Yeah, so they train these dogs. And, God, these dogs were fun to watch. You would have loved this. Both of you guys are dog guys.
And they don't eat it?
They don't eat it. They have no. So they get a treat.
Of course,
A really good treat, like meat, when they find a truffle. And so they don't care about the mushroom. They're like, I get some canard, some duck.
Dogs are great. You can train them to do anything.
And it's they're about 6 inches under the ground, and they can smell it.
Right.
And then they only grow around oak trees. Bless you, Mike. Around oak trees, and you look for where there's no grass around the oak tree. We're out in these vineyards, and that's how they kind of know that's where it might be. And then the dog stops and gives his little signal, and the dog does the most part of the digging. And then we go in there with a screwdriver and get them up.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a trip. So summer truffles are really light tasting.
Now, okay, truffle. What the hell does it taste like?
I mean, what's it? It's very aromatic and savory.
Can you compare it to any other food?
It has kind of an earthy taste.
Yeah.
But it's pleasant. Yeah. Now, it's my impression that they really have to be fresh. If you're having it in a restaurant here, if it's been shipped over and cared for, I think it can be good. But
they fly them over. They have up to 10 days to be fresh. I see a time.
Gave me the 5-minute mark.
Oh, okay.
We're good.
So anyway, so I'll open this real quick. But so I brought a beer that's got truffles in it. This adorable truffle farmer pulled this out and served this to us, and we were all beer people. So
do we have truffles that we can find here?
No, well, so ironically, I told him where I was from. Everybody else was from, like, Florida, and I said I was from Sonoma County, because I'm afraid to say USA these days, unfortunately. And yeah. I said, I'm from Sonoma, California, and everybody there knew Sonoma. Everybody in France knew Sonoma. They're, oh, you have good wine, every time they said that.
Sure.
And he said, ironically, the only people in the right now have that have successfully grown some truffles is it Kendall Jackson.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
Really?
So, and I said, Tucker Taylor, our farmer over there, and, you know, our good friend, chef, the chef over there. So that is, so here's the truffle beer.
And all right, again, you haven't really satisfied my inquiry.
I know. You know what? So
how? What do they taste like?
I mean, well, taste that beer and
yeah, but I mean,
it's savory.
Can you just take a truffle out of the ground and eat it?
No, you need to clean the dirt off of it. But that's
well,
just
okay.
It. So all you do is you brush the dirt off of it. You don't really just like you would a regular mushroom. You don't like wash it and stuff, and you don't cook them. They're raw. You want to eat them raw, and they. To me, they're like heaven, but not everybody, you know, it's not everybody's cup of tea. So, okay, so next week, I'm going to bring some truffle salt and truffle oil that I got from there.
Okay, good.
And you'll understand that.
All right, now, I'm smelling something in the nose on this beer that, boy, it's very carbonated, isn't it, Mark?
It is very, yeah.
Yeah. I'm smelling something that I normally don't smell when I'm smelling beer. But on the taste, on the palate, I don't know.
I don't get anything that of my memory of truffles in the nose, but in the taste, I
oh,
think
really?
I get that little bit of earthiness. Do you taste? I get something that's not beer.
Yeah, it's more in the flavor than in the nose. You're right.
Really, to me,
yeah,
the nose is spectacular, and I don't taste.
Yeah, it's more like really. So what's funny that in France they didn't have. We were looking at the different beer bars. They didn't have any saisons. Which I thought was interesting, considering that that area they had a lot of Belgian beers and stuff, but they had like you know they didn't have any saison, and it was warm there. It was
well, this certainly tastes like a saison to me. I think it's that type of yeast. It's got that like saison type yeast, the farm
yeast.
That's
what it smells like. Yeah.
And Mark, explain the saison thing again, because
well, saison, as far as I know, is really just traditionally is a beer made on a farm. And it could be anything.
Really?
Yeah. The local farmer's wife makes a beer, and she throws in this herb or that herb. So they can be a variety of things. That's my idea of a traditional saison. Obviously, now there are breweries making saisons. And I think the most important thing is in a saison is the type of yeast that produces that wild yeast type of flavor, because on these farms they usually just use wild yeast
and they're low alcohol, they're easier to so they can go back to work.
And American brewers tend to put in lots of different herbs, you know, lemongrass, ginger. I made one with lemongrass and ginger that I liked quite a bit.
Well, you need to bring that. Okay, so we have some big news for the Brews News from a guest of ours and a friend of mine. So remember Logan Plant was on the air, Robert Plant, son from Led Zeppelin. We had him on the show once before.
Yeah.
He owns Beavertown Brewery, which our friend Glenn Payne had introduced, who's actually been on the show too, introduced me to. And I'd been to like his original brewery and then his second brewery and then his third brewery. Well, he just took $41 million from Heineken and partnered up with Heineken for Beavertown Brewery. And it's a big deal in the entire beer world, of course, in the UK.
Wow.
His brewery is in London, in East London. And he's going to be building this huge brewery called Beaver World. Like, not just a brewery, but like a Disneyland of beer. And he does this big beer festival, kind of like our Rate Beer Festival that we had, that has like the best of the best breweries in September. And some of them are actually dropping out, which is really too bad. And I was talking to Mark about this because I'm glad for him. I mean, although all his dad had to do was do one reunion concert and that would have taken care of that, right? But, I mean, Mark, what do you think about this? Like, I mean, people are mad, you know, when these breweries sell.
Has there been criticism
of huge?
You know, it's just like logging. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, Heineken is getting into it. Heineken, I believe, is still a family-owned brewery.
They
are. Regardless, you know, you put your heart and your soul in your beer and in your brewery and you build it and you want it to go on. And if you don't have family to take over or wants to take over, then you're going to sell it to someone.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything wrong with selling to a brewer that another brewer that wants to keep it in the fashion that it's going.
Well,
you know?
He's got the family. He's got some kids and stuff. But
well, and Heineken.
Yeah.
That's pretty respected, right?
Yeah,
it's not like
Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah,
now they make a light lager beer, and people may criticize it for that, but that it's not a craft-type beer. But with these breweries they're buying, they're letting them make their beers. I mean, if they didn't, that would be a foolish
thing.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. With that so Logan said that he actually called Tony McGee at Lagunitas to ask, how's it going, you know, with Heineken, you know, how are they treating you? And I'd already talked to Ron Lindenbush about that before. And Ron had said...
At Lagunitas.
Yeah, Lagunitas. And I was talking to him at World Beer Cup, and he said, you know, the one of the family members of Heineken, one of the big wigs, was, you know, told their people there, leave them alone.
Right.
They know what they're doing.
No, Lindenbush was on this show last time he was in. He said the same thing.
Yeah,
it's like Heineken's going, don't mess with Lagunitas.
They've done some efficiency stuff from what, you know, friends of mine there have told me, you know, like just to like not necessarily cost cutting, but like tightening things up efficiency wise. But they're not messing with the brewing. They're not telling them what to brew. They're not messing with the quality.
Yeah.
And Beavertown, you know, has a uniqueness to them also. If you ever look on their website or their Facebook or anything, they have like really trippy artwork. I brought it in one time when we were talking to Logan.
I remember that.
You know, I think these people, you know, places like Beavertown and Lagunitas are making Heineken cool again.
You know, one of the biggest problems in this whole thing is the Brewers Association. They're the ones that they decide if you're a craft brewer or not. They have their rules, and this isn't.
Are you talking about California?
No, I'm talking about the United States Brewers Association.
Oh, okay.
And there's
had Tom McCormick.
Correct. And they're part of that same thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if they go along with the same rules that the Brewers Association sets up.
The national.
But this is
one.
Strictly arbitrary that they set these rules up, and and they've been dividing up this business for years into different categories, and it's. And it's absolutely silly the way they divide things up. But when Anchor at one time was the smallest brewery in America, and all of a sudden we were too big to be a microbrewery, and now to be an independent small brewer, you can make 6 million barrels. That's the size of Budweiser breweries. And some Budweiser breweries, they're like 10 of them, but some of them only make like 5, 6 million barrels. So they've been dividing things up from the beginning. My point is that you like your beer, you drink it. When you stop liking it, stop drinking it.
Right.
There you go. I'm getting a T-shirt that says that.
Well,
the great Mark Carpenter. It's Brouhaha with Mark Carpenter. Started at Anchor in San Francisco in 71. And, of course, Herlinda's back.
Hello.
Provence.
That's actually pretty. You know what's funny is that I was there, and like I was like not as like woohoo as everybody else though, because it looks a lot like here except
because
that they
you're spoiled.
Well, they have
we live in an area where it's
well they have Roman ruins and they have truffles, but everybody said there that had been here said, oh, this looks a lot like where you live. Ah, do we have a phone call? No.
We have the same climate. We have oak trees. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that Kendall Jackson has gotten these things to grow. They ought to be all over the place.
I'm gonna ask
truffles,
baby. Truffles. Yeah. So the best ones, the black ones, are in the wintertime. They're like in December, January. So I'm gonna ask Justin Wrangler if they have summer truffles or what they have right now, we'll get some fresh ones in. But I'll bring you stuff. So the other big news is there is a CO2 shortage in Europe right now. So breweries are like even big breweries like Heineken are having to stop production on their beer because there's not enough CO2, which is what makes it carbonated.
Okay, wait a minute, Mark.
I know. And that's where I was like brought in.
Yeah, now
explain.
This kind of makes
CO2.
Me laugh because all brewers need CO2. But actually in your beer, you can make, if you use traditional brewing methods, the CO2 is already there. Most brewers will let the CO2 go off into the atmosphere during the fermentation, and then they'll add it back in later on.
Was that so Croizen thing that you
talked about? Yeah, so like Anchor steam beer is Croizen. It goes through a second fermentation, just like champagne. It's really the champagne method where you go through a second fermentation.
So how do you run out of CO2? Well, doesn't it come in like tubes or something?
It's a natural gas.
Can't you get it at a gas station?
Yeah, dry ice.
Okay. Well, explain that.
Well, CO2 is just carbon dioxide, and dry ice is carbon dioxide. And you can get those blocks of dry ice and put them in a container and heat them up, and you'll get CO2 off of that. It's a byproduct of a lot of different processes, and so it's sold as a byproduct. And now I don't know what in Europe they're running short of, but the main use of CO2 in breweries is obviously for carbonating the beer if you don't Croizen, but then when you're filling a can or a bottle, you want to have CO2 for putting in the can or the bottle ahead of the beer, so you don't have oxygen pickup when you move the beer into the can or the
bottle. I can almost understand that.
Yeah, yeah. You want to have it
not totally, but yeah, almost.
You want to have it go into a CO2. And modern fillers, it's interesting because it actually will suck a vacuum on the bottle, put in CO2, suck a vacuum, and put in a second batch of CO2, and then the beer.
But they'd have to change the recipe in Europe at these breweries to be able to do the Croizen method, though, right?
Correct. They would have to get pressure vessels and whatnot, you know. But you use a lot less CO2 if you're Croizening your beer or
so they're going to have to get creative.
Now, when you say Croizen,
yeah, Croizening, it's a German word. And it's that's the second fermentation. You let the first fermentation, it's in an open fermenter. The CO2 does go off in the air there, and then you move it to the cellar, and then you add a freshly fermenting beer. In our case, a beer that had been fermenting for about 12 hours, and it still has lots of sugar in it and lots of yeast. We move that into the cellar tank. It goes through a second fermentation. All that CO2 is trapped. You have to have a vessel that can hold the pressure because we let these go to 30, 40 pounds pressure on the tank.
It could explode if you're not careful.
If you don't have a tank made for it, it could be a problem.
Wow.
So there's going to be a beer shortage in Europe. So that's pretty crazy.
Interesting. Yeah. In England, it shouldn't be a problem in England too much because especially if you're doing traditional ales, because they're not carbonated.
Yeah. That's what the Campaign for Real Ale
is saying,
which is kind of like the Brewers Association there is saying, real ale, real cider. I think our guest is – no, for a little bit? Okay.
No. We do have Louie the dog, who we love.
I do love him, so
– he just popped in. He didn't like the beer segment.
He wanted a job looking for truffles, I think.
Yeah. Now
he heard us talking about that.
He would be great at Louie the dog would be great for truffles.
I wanted to get my dog a job at the post office licking stamps, you know. But
I saw Anchor and Lagunitas all over France.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, they have Heineken behind them now, so they.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure.
Anchor, they said, has been there for a long, long time. I mean, when did you guys first go into Europe?
Oh, Anchor, we did. We went in years ago, and it was to protect our name because we had a brewery in England that was stealing our name, and you can't do anything if you're not selling there.
They were calling it Anchor Brewery?
It was called Nuki Steam Beer. And so we started selling in England in order to stop them, and we did. We were really lucky, and we did.
Wow.
And Fritz Maytag thought, well, it's cheaper to lose money selling beer in England than hiring lawyers. So we started selling in Europe, and it actually turned out to be a pretty good deal.
Cool.
There was one point when Disneyland in Paris opened, they wanted Anchor Steam. And I couldn't believe it. And they wanted Fritz to come over, and he said he didn't want to go, so he sent me and another guy from the brewery.
Didn't wear Mickey Mouse ears, did you?
Oh, shit. I'm trying to cover that up. I was hoping you wouldn't bring it up. No, we went over there, and they gave us a nice tour. And I was walking down the streets in Paris, and I'm going past a bar, and there's an Anchor neon in the bar on Saint-Germain. And I thought, holy mackerel, because my first trips to Europe were to Paris, and I just kind of fell in love with the place. And here was I was working in Anchor, and here's this neon on Boulevard Saint-Germain. And then they took us out to Disneyland, Paris Disney, and showed us all around. It was really quite something to see. I'd love to go back because they built a hotel there that mm-hmm. looked like it was from Yosemite Park with all these redwoods planted about. This is a long time ago, so I'll bet you money those redwoods are huge now. It's probably just beautiful.
Wow. I was staying on the Saint-Germain.
Brouhaha, Hop Monk Brouhaha, brought to you by everyone. and Mark Carpenter, of course, who started with Anchor Beer in San Francisco in 71.
Yes, sir. Seems like a long time ago, but it went fast. It went really fast.
Wow. Yeah, Erlinda's back. Erlinda's back from Provence and places in France and... we got the pride thing going on. We had the Santa Rosa Pride thing.
Yeah, that was
Guerinville
like,
or whatever.
Santa Rosa had their first Pride Parade in a long time in the Courthouse Square, like That's June right. 2nd. Oh, yeah, the headphones. And so San Francisco Pride, of course, has been going on for a long time. And, you know, they do, it's not even just a day or a weekend, it's a week. But for the first time, they're doing Pride beers. So we are all over supporting that. And we have Ryan Dixon from Jersey Restaurant, which is part of a group of restaurants that includes Anchor and Hope, who Ryan. Has always had an Anchor tap.
Ryan, how you great, doing, man?
I'm great. How are you all?
Cool. Explain what's going on in San Francisco.
Well, we started 4 or 5 months ago just a conversation doing sort of a roundup of a bunch of small independent brewers of how we could get to work with them and get some of their stuff into the restaurant. And a conversation with Kevin and Shay out at Ferment Drink Repeat, which short name is FDR Brewery. Kevin mentioned that they do a Pride beer for June for Pride Month, and we thought that was just a really cool way to celebrate. So we said, when we get to June, ship us a keg of that. And then as we sort of met with some of these other small independent teams, we were at Black Hammer Brewing, and they have a beer called Sparkle Pony, which has a unicorn and rainbows on the can. So
of course it does, and well it should.
And then next down the line, we were over at Benoit Casper in Richmond, and they do a home brewers competition every year. And last year... the competition was won by a group called Queers Making Beers, and they had Yes, Kolsch. So we said, send us that as well. And then we were sort of at the restaurant one day talking about this with one of our other favorite people from Laughing Monk Brewery, and they were just coming out with a limited edition can in honor of Pride, honoring Sister Amor, who's one of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence.
Sure.
And came out with this awesome rainbow-striped can with their Laughing Monk logo dressed in the nun's habit on the can. So, and then last but not least, we had a beer come in from Harmonic Brewing. They were brewing, it's a half Merlot and half beer sort of blend that's this beautiful, brilliant, vibrant purple. In honor of Pride Month. So that sort of finished off the roundup, and it's just been a great thing to feature for this month and sort of a really fun way to celebrate Pride.
So what's going on in San Francisco this weekend?
Oh, you know, there's the parades and festivals at Civic Center, and, you know, it sort of takes over the city here.
Sure.
You know, always the first June is Pride Month across the country. And June 1st, you know, all up and down Market Street, they put up the Pride flags here, which is a really sort of cool celebration for visitors to the city who come from all over the world for Pride here. It's been going on for, I think, 40 years or something.
Right.
Or more. So, you know, this is sort of the one of the big ones in the world. So it's great to be a part of that and celebrate it with beer and pizza.
Yeah. And you guys are doing all kinds of different like food, you know, Jersey. And then what is the group that you're part of? That's Anchor and Hope. What's the name of that group of the restaurants?
So Stock and Bones Restaurant Group. They have Anchor and Hope, Salt House, and Town Hall.
Oh, Town Hall. Oh, yeah.
So they, I think Town Hall opened 15 years ago, and then Jersey is the baby in the family. We've been here about 3 years.
Well, Mark Carpenter, that was the head brewer for Anchor for 40 years. So you were there, like, when all the parades and everything started.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How did that affect things downtown and beer and Anchor?
Well, you know, it just San Francisco is a wonderful, such a wonderful city. I was born there, believe it or not, and worked at Anchor for all those years, so certainly part of the city. And you know, San Francisco is just a unique place, and I'm always proud to say I'm a San Franciscan, and there's so much that goes on there. And Pride Weekend and Pride Week is just too much. I mean, it's really quite a scene.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. We've had Ferment, Drink, and Repeat on the show before, and what's really interesting about Ferment, Drink, and Repeat, we've had him in for Veterans Day events because he's an Army veteran. And he does a lot of stuff for those. So I love that he's doing a Pride beer as well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
They're really cool couple. Kevin, so that's one of the other beers that we carried of theirs. They do a beer called Fallen Comrade.
Yes.
In honor of soldiers who have lost their lives or given their lives for this country. And the proceeds from that go to a small group called the Memory Box Project out of Pastor Woods, I think. But, you know, so it's cool because these small independent brewers are also community-minded and doing charitable contributions through the beers that they're brewing. So, like, the Sister Amore from Laughing Monk is 100% of the proceeds of that are going to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence.
Right on.
And the Yas Kolsch, 10% of that, the proceeds from that beer went to the Oakland LGBTQ Center. So, you know, and it's cool, I think. Talking about San Francisco and Pride, I think one of the big things here is that it is all-inclusive. It's the entire city that is participates in that, and that's something that is a good reminder for the rest of the country that it isn't just about, you know, all the different queer groups and whatnot, but it is, you know, Kevin and Shay are a straight married couple who are brewing a Pride beer, and you know, some of the other ones are straight and straight allies, and some of them are queer. So it's cool to see that just across the board that everybody in the city gets on board and celebrates that and fights for, you know, the good fight for what's right and inclusivity for all of us.
Right on, man. Thank you so much, dude, for taking the time, and have a great weekend. I know you will.
Thank you. Happy Friday.
Raise lots of money.
Yeah. All right. God bless Mark Carpenter and Herlinda.
I need it.
It is... I'm blessing you right now.